It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. I'm Ben Ostro. I have Mark Schultz, Pat Weber, and Chris Soiberg with me this week on the First and 25 podcast. In this episode, we're going to take a closer look at replay. But first, let's look at the past week and let me know what stood out for you, Mark.
Well, in the Jets-Jaguars game, Colin Saunders got kicked out of the game for a foul against an official. Jaguars kicked an extra point, and as what happens sometimes, after the extra point, both lines came together. There was some pushing and shoving, and the officials converged on the pushing and shoving, blowing their whistles and making themselves heard. Saunders pushed side judge Boris Cheek, more of a out-of-my-way-I-want-to-fight type of shove. And Cheek threw the flag, and Saunders was kicked out of the game. Now, you say to yourself, this isn't one of those, like, baseball arguments where the manager bumps the umpire and all that stuff. So why would you kick Saunders out of the game for just maybe a shove? And there's also been times, too, when officials have been in the middle of a scrum and they all go down in a heap and the official's at the bottom of the pile and there's no flag for the official getting to the bottom of the pile. Well, when there is aggression against an official, it just simply cannot stand, even if it's an accident. If you say, well, we'll let somebody say, well, I didn't know that was Boris Cheek there. I thought that was a teammate or a opponent. Okay, we'll let that one slide. Well, what happens if an official is pushed hard to the ground the next time? Oh, sorry, I didn't know that was an official. I thought that was an opponent. Shoving an official, even in the middle of a scrum, has got to be a flag, and the player has to get the gate. As an aside, the officials step into there, making their voices heard. All right, that's enough, knock it off, knock it off. Or they're blowing their whistles. Sometimes in the middle of these big scrums, you hear 3, 4, 5 whistles blowing, and it sounds kind of funny or maybe a little silly. You know, there's 5 whistles blowing, and everybody's still fighting. It almost looks like a Keystone Cops moment. They're doing that so they know, the players know, oh, there's an official standing behind me blowing his whistle. So if I feel a hand on me, maybe I shouldn't elbow the person putting the hand on me. He's blowing a whistle. That's probably an official. Also, those Fox 40 whistles are super loud. If you're next to a Fox 40 whistle and the referee lays on it, sometimes you feel like I'm going to protect my hearing instead of stirring the pot. So, yes, fouls against an official, even accidentally in a scrum. Got to be a flag, got to be an ejection.
And one of the things we did see on Sunday, we did see referee Brad Allen hit the deck. And it was after we looked at things a little closely, somebody stepped on his foot inadvertently. So that's not a push or shove or anything like that. So just because the official hits the ground doesn't, you know, necessarily mean all instances. And, you know, like you said, it has to be an instance of aggression. And I think it's also important, though. Let's look at it mechanically. Is unless it's like right in front of you, it's important to have a full view of the play. So it may not be the person who is pushed throwing the flag. It may be somebody else who has a more holistic view of the play. Can you run us through it, like, briefly? I think I pretty much touched on most of it, but just take us to the field on that.
Yes, it depends on the amount of players involved. If you just have 2 players pushing and shoving, you pretty much know what's going on and you can separate it out. But if an official is in the middle of 5 or 6 players and he's kind of pinballing around in the middle of that scrum, there's officials orbiting the scrum on the outside, making sure peeled off players stay peeled off and don't jump back into the pile. And also to take a look and be asked as a backup pair of eyes as the official in the middle of the scrum is trying to keep the peace. So that's usually the mechanics that happen. And as a historic aside, Jerry Mark Bright, referee in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, was famous. He would wade in there fearlessly, and there'd be a scrum, and many times he'd end up at the bottom of the pile.
All right, now let's send it over to Pat Weber. What do you got this week?
Yeah, you know, we're moving into the fourth quarter of the season. Emotions are starting to get high. That goes for the officials and the players, especially in the Denver Broncos and Green Bay Packers game. There was some pregame pushing and shoving in the warmups. I'm not 100% sure of the pro mechanics, but that's why in college football we are out in the field an hour before the game. One of the many reasons, just to make sure we have eyes and have a presence and are between teams so they don't do anything they may regret later. But the teams are fighting for playoff position. The officials are making their last efforts towards getting playoff assignments as well.
And here you have two interconference teams, so immediately kind of think, well, maybe there's not a lot going on here, but as you say, they're fighting for playoff positions and all that. And at least at the pro level, the officials take jurisdiction of the game site 100 minutes before kickoff. So yes, during that warm-up, they are positioned to essentially patrol a DMZ between each of the lines there. It gets a little bit of an overlap in the kicking lanes, but generally, it's laid out very specifically. Here's your receivers. Here's your linemen. These are the areas that they can practice in, and having enough of a buffer space in between. And like we said, we get to the kickers because they're practicing longer distances. They do overlap those lanes out on the outside, but that is part of the job of the crew of seven to keep an eye on that. And in that particular situation, we didn't see any penalties thrown. There certainly could have been. There could have been ejections. And if there was only one penalty, it would have been assessed on the kickoff. But you also have replay there. And we saw the Skycam was orbiting right over the top of that. So they have the ability to take license plate numbers right there and call out offenders to assess ejections even before the game. So yes, their jurisdiction starts well before the players are out there for practice. Chris, take us through what you saw this week.
Yeah, I think the official election platform of the Football Zebras website is to nerf the K-ball. I don't know if anyone has noticed this. I'm sure you have as a fan, but we have extraordinarily long field goals going through with ease this season. Cam Little has set, obviously set the record earlier this year with a 68-yard field goal. Every game, again, we've been discussing a little bit where if you're playing fantasy football and you have bonuses for kickers that get over 50-yard field goals, you're probably rolling in points because of all these field goals over 50 yards. And this is due to a change in the rules this year where the teams are now allowed to essentially doctor the balls, I guess you could say. They work them in before the games. They scuff them. They do whatever they want to them now. And that gives the kicker, obviously, some feel and some time around the ball to actually get used to it, and also works them in and gives them the extra distance that they need. Again, whether it's a good thing or not, I'm not sure. We moved the extra point back for a reason because it was too easy. Now we've made it even easier for these long field goals. And, we took a little bit of the potential win for Philip Rivers away when, they scored the go-ahead points and then Seattle just marched down the field and easily kicked a long field goal to win the game. So that's what I've noticed. And, we'll make our signs up for our election season to nerf the K-balls in the future.
And as we are recording this, the instant we are recording this, the Monday Night Football game is on. And yes, there's a 54-yard field goal in the cold of Pittsburgh that easily splits the uprights, just putting a little exclamation point on the end of your point there. And yes, we're seeing, I think we were up to about 9 60-plus yard field goals, which I think that's probably about like a tenth of all history, NFL history, of 60-plus yarders. We'll get quirky research on the exact numbers on that, but there's probably been about 41 others, so that's about 50. So, if my math checks out, that's probably about 20% instead. But so it's definitely an uptick to have the teams in the custody of the K-balls this season. That there's an obvious correlation there. And so it's something that the competition committee is going to have to look at. Is this a wanted change? Is this something that they were expecting to see or not? And as far as the officials checking the ball, the K-balls, which they do in the pregame, there's nothing that they've been told to be on the lookout for, that I've been told. So we enter week 16. So we have 15 weeks behind us. And one of the things that we've noticed from time to time is some of these calls go into replay. We have a certain expectation from what we see, and then the call doesn't seem to match the expectation out of the replay booth, the call out of the replay booth. So I just kind of want to set that up for you right there. I know we had a big call in week 15, but let me just throw that out to you. You know, what you're seeing at the NFL replay, and is this something also bleeding down to some of the college conferences as well?
Yeah, I guess I can start on this mini rant because I kind of brought this up. This comes about a little bit from the Rams-Lions game where Colby Parkinson appeared to be short of the goal line on a reception. They sent it to replay. It was ruled a touchdown on the field. They sent it to replay, and replays seem to clearly show the audience that his knee was clearly down about the 1 yard line. And it looked like he had control of the ball. Now, as we know, there are a bunch of different steps in the completing the process of the catch. You have to have control, you have to have a body part down, and you have to finish the process of the catch. And since he was going to the ground, he had to survive the ground. And you can kind of see in the replays that there is movement of the ball. So from what we've been told, and I think what came up on the broadcast, I think it was Dean Blandino came up on the broadcast, was that when they went to review it, they said he lost control of the ball. And when he retained it, it did not hit the ground. But when he retained control of the ball and finished the process of the catch, he was in the end zone. So they gave him the touchdown. They said it stands. Now, I think if you put a jury, say, of just standard football fans watching this play, they would have called him down at the one. They said, yeah, he caught the ball. Doesn't look like it hit the ground. We're going to rule him down at the one. I think that's where all the social media people went crazy. And obviously all the Lions fans went crazy because they feel they're aggrieved by every official's call in the world. And I think this comes back to a point where we seem to be overly technical on replay sometimes, where we slow everything down to the microsecond of control, no control, every angle that they can get. And I feel like the NFL needs to use every angle because that's what the audience sees. So maybe that's what's going on. Maybe they just feel the need to try to get everything right when everybody complains that they get everything wrong. But I do feel like we are starting to wade into the weeds with the technicalities when it comes to replay.
And Mark, when we throw this, any particular call into replay, the standard, I mean, a lot of people like to call the standard 50 drunks in a bar. But it's a little more technical than that, and we're not re-officiating the play. That's got to be underscored. They did that from 86 to 1990, and that was pretty disastrous. But the standard is not, we're going to re-officiate the play.
That has been the mantra ever since replay came back in 1999, and that's exactly what it has to be. Because if you want to re-officiate the play, pretty soon you're going to be officiating the game one or two people in a computer lab. If that happens, I'm out. You can't simply do that. However, in pro ball, it is very, very highly skilled players. And the catch that we give to a 17-year-old on Friday night might not be what we give or what the pro official gives to a player on Sunday afternoon. So there are definite ways that they want to quantify and codify what a catch is. But again, you're not re-officiating the play. And this Lions play on Sunday felt a little bit like re-officiating the play, which was unfortunate. And when Dean Blandino heard the explanation for why the play stood, he said, quote, "That's a stretch," end quote. So when a former supervisor of official or vice president of officiating is raising one eyebrow, it makes you wonder. One other quick thing. I wish during the replay process, when they're showing it frame by frame, they would show the play one time in real time. A toe tapper on the sideline, or that slide into the end zone. Quick, what's the call? You don't have a call? You're already too late. You look dumb now. You look hesitant. Make the call. That's what I wish they would do sometimes on these real tight plays. But sorry, I digress.
And what we're looking at is a standard of clear and obvious evidence. And when we're presented with the, well, we see a loss of control potentially, and in this case, we're going to go with stands, they're not ruling touchdown. They're just saying we're not overturning the touchdown. We're going to let that stay because we have some doubt as to whether or not possession. Now, reasonable people can argue about whether or not that was a loss of possession or whether that planted enough doubt. And then it does come to when you're looking at this, Pat, that it's that clear and obvious standard. And it's something that the NFL has stuck to almost too much, to a hyper-technical stance. And we see some calls as well in some of the college games as well that get a little bit off what our expectations are.
Yeah, I feel for the most part, college has done pretty well with holding to the clear and obvious standard. They did change the language this year at the college level. They no longer use convince or confirmed stands or overturned. Now it is just upheld or overturned. We did talk about a play in the NFL from a few years ago, the Austin Seferian Jenkins touchback from 2017. Kind of started at that time, the NFL kind of getting away from reofficiating the play and back to the clear and obvious standard. There was actually a similar play in the Ohio State Michigan game a few weeks ago where a runner going into the end zone maybe briefly lost the ball and regained control. Replay let that one stand, and I thought that was a good stance because I do think that would have been a little over officious to say that he actually lost control before he went in the end zone. Most college conferences are also split right now between centralized replay and still having replay officials at the stadium that make the calls. And so you see that split a little different when certain conferences have the same people making every call versus other conferences have, you know, their 7 or 8 replay officials on their 7 or 8 crews making calls. So I think that helps when everyone has that strong standard of clear and obvious evidence it helps to be more consistent.
And in the case of Austin Seferian Jenkins in 2017, that was Tony Correnti was the referee that day. And in those days, the referee had a little bit more say under the hood on the calls. And yes, it was, he had established possession. And then in his reach to the end zone, momentarily re-gripped the ball. So he had possession. And then you could say, lost it, gained it real quick. And because it was only evident in replay that he had that momentary, where the ball was momentarily out of control. If it was only because of replay that you could determine that, they said, it's bang, bang, we're going to let that go. The key difference is between Parkinson's catch on the weekend and this one from 2017, and then they changed the rule to 2018, is that Parkinson didn't have possession established. He was still in the catch process, so that standard wouldn't apply. Again, I still think it was a little bit hyper-technical there, maybe a lot bit hyper-technical. But I do remember in the 2018, in the preseason, Correnti was at the Jets training camp, and I happened to be there covering the rules presentation he was doing, and that was specifically one that he said he submitted to the at the competition committee to have them look at it, and that was where that change emanated from, that particular play and others that were very similar to it. So at that particular time, we moved out of that, you know, that clear and obvious. I think at some point we had different language where it was indisputable evidence, And that one wound up getting reworded because pretty much anything could be disputed. So we started to go into a terminology shift, and then it's like, well, it's got to be clear and obvious, which then means you put a football sense to what's happened. You don't try and imagine things that, well, this could technically be this way. You just say, as a football bounces, this is how it bounces. If it does this, it means it hit the ground here, or something like that. But again, we're looking at a situation where these come up, and I would guess that for the most part, I'll throw this out, that you're seeing this probably more often in these catch calls, and not when we're dealing with lines and things of that nature, or whether a ball was touched or not touched.
Instant replay is great for boundary calls. It's the juggling. When does he have control? When is the process of the catch completed? That's where instant replay review gets controversial.
And it's funny because when we did the whole pass interference experiment, they seem to very much defer to the, we're not changing it unless it's like we were in New Orleans, right? Where it was clear and obvious. And they were right there, but now they seem to have gone back to re-officiating everything a little bit more now.
And I agree that the heavy-handedness is a little bit of a change that kind of gradually came about. I mean, we do have a vice president of replay, Mark Butterworth, who's in his second year there. So, you know, maybe you say the first year he's still trying to establish things, second year, whether or not it's new people that are in the booths. We had a little bit of a personnel shift there, but not much. Most of the people that are in there now, if not all of them at this point, are replay-specific officials and assistants. It used to be that you could graduate from the field up to the booth as kind of like a glide path out of retirement and still be involved. I was at the clinic that they had here in Jacksonville, and usually I observed the on-field officials. And this year I sat in on the replay, and I have a total different understanding of what goes on there and how it's a complete different mindset. There were some example plays where they were saying, okay, here's what this is, without saying what was called on the field first, and you look at it and you've had in your mind, okay, this is what that is going to be called. And now they say, well, this is what they called on the field. You have to make your call in this box. Did that call stand? Is that an overturn or something like that? Or, you know, you cannot now use that sense that you had on that play while you watch the live play to say, well, I'm going to apply what I would have called had I been on the field. Completely different mindset. But you do have to be aware of that as they're looking at the play. You'll have a replay assistant that's calling out. They're like, all right, we got pass. Oh, that looks like we may not have had the hands going forward. They're already shuttling back the video, and the play isn't even over. So it's a lot of these complex elements that we don't see on the field level, that it's a completely different mindset. But the one thing that does come in is targeting, and I want to kind of briefly hit on that because that starts to get into those subjective elements.
Yeah, when it comes to college football, targeting is everyone's favorite call. Never any controversy whatsoever. Targeting to me is a lot like what is a catch, in the same vein of there's a lot of ideas out there that maybe not a lot of people know the exact criteria of what targeting is looking for. In the college game, you know, they don't have fines. They really don't want to suspend if they don't have to, like the way the NFL would. So it is a good tool to have in a game to determine whether a call that you're going to be ejecting somebody on is correct or not. And I feel when you really boil down the criteria, you know, they're looking for, depending on if you have targeting of a defensive player or targeting the crown, you're looking for, you have to have an indicator. So you need a launch, crouch and thrust, forcible contact to the head or neck of a defensive player. And then you need to see the actual contact, whether it's with the crown or a hit to the head or neck of a defensive player. And to have a confirmed call, you have to have both of those elements clear on video.
And with that, should there be controversy on the field? Well, replay confirms. And with that, we have Mark Schultz, Pat Weber, Chris Soibert, myself, Ben Ostro. Thank you for listening to the First and 25 podcast. We'll catch you next week.